But finally, if we want a completely independent newspaper, then of course there's the Financial Times, but that's just too boring to read. It's with great pleasure that I introduce our speaker today, the Deputy Chief Executive of the Rossiyskaya Gazeta, Eugene Abov, to talk about Putin's media. Can government finance journalism be independent?
Well, thank you, Anna Marie. Do you hear me? You hear me, right? Actually, I'm here because of the project which we launched together with the South China Morning Post. So in several days, on Wednesday, you will see the new supplement, Russia Beyond the Headlines, which will be inserted inside the South China. And this is a part of a chain of supplements which we produce and publish in 14, now already 15 countries, on 10 languages. And I will be, just not to introduce the whole project, I just want you to see the short flash presentation of this. So you might be frightened, so how many countries and frightened by the number of titles which we penetrated with our Putin's propaganda. So the project was launched in 2007, 5 years ago, and we started with the Washington Post and the Daily Telegraph, and then expanded in other countries. So it produced monthly. The whole content is prepared in Moscow. The latest launch last year was with Yomiuri in Japan. Can you imagine feelings of editors of like Washington Post or Le Figaro or La Repubblica or Al País in Spain? Can you imagine their feelings when their publisher or business director approaches them saying that a Russian governmental newspaper wants to make supplements inside your publication? So what can you imagine their feeling? And of course, the first reaction was that they were very nervous. And sometimes they rejected this. But the whole experience of our project proved that we really can manage to meet the old standards of quality journalism and meet old standards of independent press. So I just finished this because I'm not sure it's... Sorry, I'm not very much intelligent in this. Okay. Anyway, so this project is financed by Rossiyskaya Gazeta, which is a governmental newspaper in Russia. It's a daily newspaper, and the main mission of this newspaper is to be the official publisher, the official publicator of all laws and regulations of the Russian government, presidential decrees, parliament laws. Laws which are accepted by the parliament. And so it was the main mission. As they say in UK, all laws should be gazetted, you know. So we are gazetting laws and regulations. And they come into effect only after they are published in Rossiyskaya Gazeta. This is the core mission of this media. Another mission is to be a general interest newspaper. And in this sense, we are competing with all other general interest newspapers which are private. And the main now in Russia, the main advantage is unbiased content. So if Russians are sick and tired of propaganda, Russians are sick and tired of content which is directly controlled. That is why, for instance, the trust towards Russian TV channels, central TV channel, which cover the whole country. There are three of them which are fully controlled by the government. The trust goes down. So we have to compete with independent press. And doing this, we have to follow all rules, all standards of real journalism. So the question whether government-subsidized press can provide independent journalism or can do independent journalism, you can address this question to those sub-editors in those newspapers where we work, asking them whether they feel that the content is biased or whether they have any arguments against those journalists who work behind those pieces. And in our case, we do not have staff writers at all. We have only freelancers, half of them foreigners, half of them Russians. And those freelancers are making stories for us. And it's absolutely impossible that anybody from governmental side could make any pressure upon them. So my answer to this core question, whether it can happen, my answer is yes, it can happen. And another sample in our country is very, very good sample, I think. It's the governmental information agency, RIA Novosti. Frankly, I don't know how they sound in English. I know they have an English wire. I never followed them in English. But I do follow them in Russian. And I would say that they present one of the best quality journalism in the country. So you can read the Moscow News newspaper, which is produced by RIA Novosti, which is fully edited by a British editor in Moscow, former deputy chief editor of the Moscow Times, which is fully independent newspaper. And you can, I have samples, if anybody who cares can ask me. I have samples of these newspapers. Moscow News, follow it. We have a very interesting publication, also 100% subsidized by the government, which is called Russia Profile. I think Russia watchers, if there are here in this audience, they know this publication, and it's absolutely unbiased and absolutely credible product. And government also subsidized the website, which is called InoSmi, which is in Russian is foreign media. Actually, all major newspapers of the world, all articles about Russia, are being fully translated into Russian and presented to visitors of this website, which is open for everybody. To give you, I'm not saying that there are no problems in Russia. I'm not saying that relations between Kremlin, for instance, and between Putin being president or prime minister, the relations are very bright between press and Putin, between press and government. No, they are not bright. But I would tell you one story which happened in 1996. Those who follow Russian politics or Russian internal situation, they may know that in 1996, it was the year of elections in Russia, the same as today, as this year. If you remember, it was President Yeltsin was about to be re-elected. The elections should have been in June 1996, and in January 1996, all polls showed that Yeltsin's rating is very low, and that his main rival's rating, communist Zhuganov, is extremely high. And this was the reality. The whole press was absolutely independent. There was no agenda about control over press from the government. And in February 1996, several Russian oligarchs. You know this word, oligarchs, yeah? The richest people in the country, those who were, they gathered in Switzerland in Davos. There was another conference in Davos. They attended this conference. And one day they gathered in one room in Davos facilities, closed the door, and started discussions what they can do not to allow communists come back. Because to their mind, the threat was absolutely obvious. And the best thing they invented, they decided that they should buy media. And this was the time when oligarchs started buying major Russian TV channels and major Russian newspapers and major Russian magazines. And this was the time when what is called in the history of Russian media of information wars. All major channels and all major publications started to promote Yeltsin and started like a blackmailing against communists. Finally, Yeltsin won. Yeltsin was the winner. And it was great victory of all liberal forces in Russia. It was great victory for all democratically minded people. But it was the first evidence and the first very obvious sign that press in Russia can be manipulated. Because actually press made Yeltsin come back and made Yeltsin win this, not made, but facilitated his victory. And when we discuss what then happened when Putin arrived to the office, we always refer to this situation. Putin hates press. This is my personal opinion. It's, you know, he is the kind of persons who, as far as I can understand, so I never met him, I never spoke with him, I just making my own opinion. He's kind of person who always thinks that press is always manipulated by the owner. People who pay, they control. People who pay, they put the content which is good for them, not good for others. So this is the kind. It took a lot of time but Putin really took control over press, especially TV channels, very soon after he arrived to the office. But this was his response to those oligarchs who decided that they can manipulate Putin. Because in the year 2000, when Putin came to election campaign and was about to be elected as the president of Russia, his rating in January 2000, the rating of unknown KGB officer, it was about 6%. He was known, of course, because he was prime minister of the country, he had a good position, but still it was just 6%. By June 2000, his rating became 66%. And he knew very well, he understood very well how press works. That is why his first intention was, when he came to the office, to not to allow such things happen in the future, that somebody behind his back would manipulate press. And this was his response to attempts of different people whose names are often in press, like Berezovsky, if you know the name, who is in exile now in London. Gusinski, all those owners of major Russian press who tried to make real pressure upon Putin, and they thought that Putin might be like a puppet in their hands. So the outcome, so they are one in Israel, another one in London, Putin in Moscow. Currently, so we have in Russia about 55,000 media titles in print, only in print, 55,000. Among them, we have 15,000 newspapers all over the country, including small, local, regional papers. There is no, it's really impossible to take control over all these newspapers. What really happens, to take control from Kremlin all over all these newspapers, what really happens that a lot of regional and local papers are really under pressure of local governors, are really under pressure of local municipal authorities. That's true. And this is something which has to be changed. Another thing, the Kremlin doesn't care about those newspapers because their impact is very low. In our country, with this huge territory, with very poor distribution infrastructure, with very poor printing facilities, print media are not as important as TV. And now, TV is really the case. But if you compare TV as it was, for instance, even 2 years ago, if you compare this what you see on TV now, after during all those protests which happened in Moscow, I think you somehow follow this wave of protests, anti-Putin protests, by the way. Who do not, those protests, they do not cover the majority of the country because Putin's rating is still very, very high in the whole country. According to the latest ratings, it's about the poll among those who are going to vote on March 4th shows that people who go to vote, 66% of them would be willing to vote for Putin. But in any case, the what we see now in our channels would, if you knew Russian, so you will make a very obvious decision that this is absolutely independent, because the government has to show really everything what happens in the country. Usually when they ask me, are you doing propaganda or are you doing independent journalism? I would say that we are not independent, because independent journalism is usually associated with media which are not subsidized by the government. But I would say we are not propaganda, because propaganda means for me a kind of bad journalism. What is propaganda? It's bad journalism. If a writer writes like a propaganda, that means that he doesn't care about separation of facts and opinion. He or she doesn't care, he or she ignores third party's opinion or third party's position. He or she wants to promote only one side of the event and ignoring the other side of the event. It's all about bad journalism. And the good journalism now is the main driver for competition among Russian media. We try to follow it because we are competing not with Russian media, we are competing with foreign media. And we want to follow all rules and standards which available in foreign press markets. And we are very thankful to all our sub-editors and guest editors, who native speakers, professionals, who help us to do this project and who help us to avoid any label of propaganda in our products. I'm not sure whether I met your needs, but I will be happy to pick up your questions.
Would you like to remain
Yes, I can. If you have any questions about Russian media, about whatever.
Okay, when you're answering the questions, if you, the microphones will go around the room, and if you could introduce yourselves and say who you work for. Thanks very much.
Mr. Abov, Douglas Wong from the club, first vice president of the club. I work for Bloomberg.
Right.
I wonder whether, thank you very much for your comments. I wonder whether you could tell us what Russia Now, Russia Beyond the Headlines, has been telling readers around the world about the current election campaign, with the elections this weekend, of course. Given that, as you say, it's government finance, but you're telling us that there is no influence at all, what we read in the foreign, in the international media, is about the incredible demonstrations in the bitter cold of Moscow, closing down highways again yesterday. Is that the sort of reporting that your Russia Now, Russia Beyond the Headlines has been telling the world? And I wonder what, if you could tell us why you think the Russian government under Mr. Putin and his administration have no problems with this and are willing to finance this.
Well, as for coverage of those protests, it was the cover story on all our titles. So it was this what I have with Brazilian, with Folha de São Paulo. So it's cover story, and this also with Argentinian Clarín. So, and there are a lot of other samples like this. This is with El País in Spain. So it was the cover story, and you know, we try to show the. We give the in-depth, and we try to say our readers that we are not on the government side, but we are not a channel for opposition. So we give we are monitoring this from outside, and so I think all our submitters were happy with this coverage. So I can only give their opinion, and I know that in some embassies. Our ambassadors were very surprised what we are doing. We are a governmental newspaper. You should follow the side of the government. Why you give place for opposition people in your columns? But what have we do? Because opposition people are real players now in this event. So we had nothing to do but to provide the. Otherwise, we lose credibility. And if we lose credibility, so this project should be closed. That's it. Why the government does it? So the idea belongs to the former general director of Rossiyskaya Gazeta, who decided to share the content with foreign audience, the content about Russia. The problem was, and I fully agree with this, that Russia, let us say, underrepresented in foreign media. And, you know, it's usually Russian events are shown from black side, from negative side. And when we speak with foreign editors, they say, look, I have 4 pages for international section in my newspaper. I have to cover the whole world. There is little space left for Russia. And if I have a negative story, I will definitely put it. If I have a positive story, well, probably no. If I have just a story, definitely no. So the idea was to give information about Russia from the angles and which are not covered in foreign media, so to fill this gap. And every country, every government, I think, cares about their information flow abroad, and we know a lot of examples of this. We know that all emerging economies, like China, by the way, like Brazil, like India, Turkey, Malaysia, they're doing a lot promoting their tourism opportunities, their countries, their culture, business opportunities in their countries. So our decision was to make the same job, but through quality journalism, not through advertorials. So that's an experiment, and we are happy that it's still being financed, though we are now on the way to finding alternative sources among private businesses also. And actually, government gives money. No, the money is aggregated budget coming from agencies, state agencies in charge for tourism, in charge for culture, in charge for regional development. So it's aggregated money from different sources. And we are not sure that any private company can afford such a project. Okay?
Hello. Welcome to Hong Kong, Mr. Aboth.
Thank you.
Hope you enjoy your time here. Thank you for your assurances that the publication will be free of governmental manipulation, as you term it. Your assurances will be proven by the print run in coming weeks and months. My concern is manipulation by the host newspapers. What safeguards do you have for manipulation by host newspapers against Russia beyond the headlines?
The question was?
The question is, I believe that you have experienced manipulation by at least one host newspaper, and I would like to hear of safeguards that your organization has put in place in order to prevent this occurring again in the interests of good journalism.
You mean manipulation by host newspaper?
Indeed.
If you mean South China Morning Post, frankly, I didn't follow.
Well,
I do not have any samples of any.
Would you like us to talk about it? Because there's an audience here, and I've got the facts.
Maybe at the end of the questions, Nick.
Are you sure about that, Anne?
Yes, I'm not saying. I just think that everybody needs a chance at the microphone.
To summarize my question, I have more confidence in the newspaper, in the publication, reporting faithfully without interference from Moscow. However, interference from host publications, not necessarily in Hong Kong, but the world over, that could be a concern for your publication and for its readership. That's my question.
Well, I know there are a lot of negative publications in foreign media about Putin. There's a lot of negativism. So all foreign media are quite negative, mainly all foreign media are quite negative. All Russians are positive, majority of Russians. So there should be something behind this. And we try to explain this in our pages. We never come into discussion with host newspaper. So they publish an article, we publish counter article. They publish opinion, we publish counter opinion. No, we never do this. We have our own editorial plan and our own editorial line, and we never coordinate this with the newsroom of host publications. It's up to them. But I would say that, for instance, people from the Deutsche or from La Repubblica, they tell us privately, those people who are involved into content, that we gave them a lot of extra information. And readers whom we address to, we are making readership survey every year, and one of our questions is whether you think that you got a new information about Russia and whether you think that this is alternative information about Russia. So this is something different from what you used to hear from your local domestic media. And in 65% of cases, the answer is yes. In France, the answer, in the United States, it's a little bit lower. In France, it's higher. And they say that it's really new knowledge for us. So that's the target we're trying to achieve.
So okay? Do you feel that part of the problem is that Russia doesn't sell itself?
Sorry?
Do you feel that part of the problem is that Russia doesn't sell itself?
Russia doesn't sell. You know, there isn't. Yes, that's also a problem. Then another problem is Russian journalism, I'm sorry to say. The problem is that, you know, when we started this project, it was complete failure on the very start. Complete failure. And the main problem was that all that the content which we took from Russian newspapers translated into English in this case and put into Washington Post supplement, in our supplement with the Washington Post, the content was awful, and all editors, sub-editors said that this is not a journalism at all, because this is really propaganda. I mean, propaganda means all these signs of bad journalism which I mentioned before. And we had to fully stop the project and fully reinvent the workflow in such a way that we do not take articles from Russian press. We create our own content. We use freelancers, those who can write for foreign newspapers. It means that Russian press, Russian articles, very good articles which are published in Russian media, they are not presented in foreign media. So they are not translated, as you know, as the New York Times, for instance. The New York Times, by the way, is doing the same supplements, similar project. New York Times is running in 26 foreign newspapers all over the world, if you know this. And they are doing the best of the times, as they say it. On a weekly basis, they put into their supplements, New York Times Weekly, the best articles from the Times. So my ambition is to make our project the best of the Russian media. So the best articles which we think worth being translated and presented to foreign audience from Russian radio, from Russian online, from Russian magazines, and from Russian newspapers. So, and I think that this will be part of Russia selling itself through journalism, through quality journalism, of course.
If I could just propose a question. This supplement in Russia, in South China Morning Post on Wednesday, will be in English.
It will be English, yeah.
How does it differ from the supplements that you publish in English elsewhere? In what way are you looking at specifically an Asian audience and Asian readership?
Actually, this is a global project with local products. Each supplement is localized for a particular market. About half of the content is shared between different countries. For instance, the selection content, it's shared because it's for all countries. But in each particular case, the regional editor makes it the story local and brings local flavor, local context to every story. Our editors are not native speakers.
Can you give an example for what we will see on Wednesday?
Good question. Here is the editor of this publication, because I'm just publisher, I'm sorry. I saw it only today, by the way. Konstantin, can you give an example of a localization of content in which was taken? Konstantin is running the Indian edition. But, you know, if you write about, for instance, elections or for instance, protests, we find, for instance, for Italian issue, we find Italian citizen in Moscow, what he thinks about it, or some feedback like this. Do you have any samples? No.
It is, isn't it?
In each issue will have a special city page. In the next issue, we'll also have a city page with a story connected with Hong Kong. Please read it tomorrow, the day after tomorrow, and you will find out what it is about. Also, we see this edition not as a purely oriented on Hong Kong, but on China also, to some extent. So we'll have several pages devoted to, say, business relations between Russia and China, some interesting projects of Russian business in China also. So this is the way how we localize the content of our. But the work, of course, will continue in the March issue and in the April issue. We'll find more topics which can be of interest to the local audience. Thank you.
And of course, the local sub-editors, they add their professional intelligence because they often rewrite headlines. You know, the best headline which we ever had in Washington Post will never go to Daily Telegraph. Never, they deny. American headlines, we hate them, so we have another style. So, you know. Or in Argentina, so we can take a story from Spanish edition with El País, but in Argentinian case, it will not be just localized, but it will be even the Argentinian Spanish is different from European Spanish, as Brazilian Portuguese is different from European Portuguese. The same, I think, the same peculiarities we have in Hong Kong English as compared to American English, for instance. So, and this, so that's why I like this project, because it's a chance to make one content available for all markets and to be close to all markets, to particular markets.
Okay, thank you for your comments. I have one question, and it's about you assured us that your newspaper is a free newspaper and it's free from propaganda, but I was wondering if there were any instances of where you came under fire from the Kremlin government for putting some rather negative articles at the front page of the newspaper and had to rearrange it to some of the pages to back, and whether there were any subtle interference from
of what interference?
Subtle. Small. not obvious interference, but a type. Yeah.
Well, I never got any calls from any governmental office. What I often heard is very tough reaction of Russian ambassadors, because in some countries, because they were quite sure that since we are governmental newspaper, so we have to promote governmental line, and when they read what we write, so they feel themselves responsible because they are state representatives in the country, and we are state media, and it needs to speak with them. And I spoke with them. Now we come to the country each time before the launch to speak with the ambassador and explain to him the mission of this project, and that we are completely separated from editorially from any governmental source. And by the way, they feel relief, because they say, "Oh, good! I'm not responsible for this." So that's what happened in some cases. But finally, I never heard anything of the kind which you told us.
Yes, this gentleman here.
I don't know what they think, but I never heard. Sorry.
Yeah. Could we get two microphones down here? We've got about 3 minutes more for questions. Yeah, first this gentleman and then this lady here. Oh, either way.
Okay. Since you're funded by the Russian government, do you worry about the bottom line at all? And how? And may I ask, what's the budget in general for your huge project? I'm Ying Chen from the University of Hong Kong.
Yeah, but I'm sorry, because sometimes I do not understand the exact question.
The budget, and do you worry about the bottom line? Do you have to make money?
Yes, we worry about the bottom line, because actually the budget is shrinking, but the list of countries expands. And we have last year we launched, for instance, iPad application, which is called Touch Russia, very much recommend you, by the way, Dutch Russia in Apple Store. So it costs us a lot. And that is why I'm now looking for extra funds from private companies and from, for instance, tourism administrations of particular regions to support this project through not only through publications, but through events which we can organize around our project. We do it in United States, we do it in Brazil, we do it in Argentina, so it works very well. And so we are looking for more sponsors. So the bottom line is the problem for me as a publisher. And the government is shrinking its funding, unfortunately. Sorry. But we do not, the money we pay money to host papers, but the money we pay, they cover only production of this supplement. Production, sub-editing service, inserting like this. It's not like, you know, like we pay for advertising.
Okay, and last question.
The last question.
My name is Eugene Reznikov. I don't work for government. I work for a Russian logistics company in Hong Kong. My question is about online media. Online media in Russia becomes more and more big on scale and more influential, as they say. You mentioned that in the very beginning, Putin established his control over TV channels, first of all. So I got two questions. First, do you really think that online media in Russia is having any kind of influence at all, if any? And to which extent does government have control over online media?
At the moment, no control. And at the moment, the online, web environment is completely independent. You know, they have like RIA Novosti, they have ITRTAS, they have some agencies which are online also, state agencies. But your question was asked to Putin himself in his latest press conference. Are you going to establish control over internet? By the way, there are a lot of voices in Russia who say that should be control, because internet is absolutely especially everything which happens in social networking. Putin said no. He said no. He said firmly, we shall look. I am very much looking forward for him to keep his promise. Or to find some industrial industry tools, like press councils, you know, like something like this, like self-regulation tools, but not decrees, not governmental tools. So a month ago, he said no. What would he say 3 months ahead? I don't know. Yes, you know, I think that all those protests in Moscow, they will never happen if there were no such thing of like social networking, like Facebook and like online media. Really.
Okay.
This is the great tool for civil society.
Have you got time to answer some questions afterwards from people?
Okay. Do I have time? Because I have another meeting at 2:30. So, okay. 2:45, yeah. Sorry?
Yeah. What I would like to say is, because we normally finish at 2, is that if anybody needs to rush off to their next meeting, please feel free. I don't want to hold you up, but obviously there's great interest in Mr. Abov, so I mean, if people are happy for us to run it another 5 minutes, then you know, please do stay. So who was... yes, go ahead.
Oh, good idea. Okay. I'm Joel Lakin, head of a PR firm here. We're members of something called the Council of Public Relations Firms of Hong Kong. There might be one or two members here besides myself. Be very interested in knowing your editorial trust in terms of sections, like will there be an editorial section or center where we would like to look at energy and power stories coming out of Russia, which is the big story, from nuclear to oil to coal. Then there's also culture and the arts. And there's also other aspects of business coming from Russia. Of course, a lot of our fellow members of the CPRF would like to know, who do they send their press releases to? But I think you're not taking any news from outside Russia. It's all from Russia to the outside world, correct?
Yes.
But what about the sections I mentioned. Will there be any like specialties going on, or is it strictly generalist news?
The first supplement, which you will be able to read day after tomorrow, it will be more general. It will be really Russia beyond the headlines. By the way, we are discussing probably to make the title different slightly to make more focus on bilateral relations. And of course, we would be willing to collect feedback coming from different sides, from readers, from companies, from public relations agencies, I don't know, what topics are most relevant now for the Russia-China, Russia-Hong Kong agenda. And if there will be a request or recommendation that we should cover energy topic or space topic or whatever, so of course we shall do this because we want to follow the demand. We are sitting in Moscow, you know, and we do not know how people open this paper, how they what they feel, what they think about it. So that is why it's very important for us to hear voices, and we shall establish a bureau here, a special representative here who will be in charge for collecting those feedbacks, and of course we shall try to meet all requests for special content inside special sections or special topics inside our section.
Okay, if we can end it there. We've got a present from the FCC for Mr. Abbott, so thank you very much for your very interesting speech.
Thank you. And I have a counter present for you.
Oh, have you? Great. We've got to do a picture.